Are we rocking? We're rolling. We're hot. We're live. We're recording. Right on. You're not going to stay, huh? You got nothing you want to say?
You want to bring him a bowl of water?
Sure.
Just a little one?
Yeah.
You want us to wait?
No.
have Omar make an appearance in the background?
Exactly.
Thirsty for camo.
Thirsty little dog.
Yeah, he's been going hard with Piper.
He's getting big. Growing right up.
Are you still guys doing the weekly photo?
Bi-weekly.
Bi-weekly photo with Joe?
Yeah.
Have you looked at him?
Pretty different.
Pretty stark.
Just the 2 week, yeah.
Yeah, that's
pretty different. His head's even changing. Like his head looks older. Yeah.
They grow so fast.
I feel bad for everyone watching. They can't see him.
Nope. Too bad.
We need a seat. What happened to his old seat? We're going to get
too bad.
I'll get him a play seat.
Okay.
When he gets a little older, huh? When he can like hold place.
Well, he can hold place right now for a while, but definitely not an hour.
An hour and a half.
40 minutes.
Just make him a little make a little tree right here with a little
little platform. Dog blind. Yeah.
I can barely hold it for an hour and a half.
No, me too.
So I'm
striking.
I wouldn't expect a dog to. How's your guys' weekend?
It's good.
Good.
Lorenzo seems a little less enthusiastic.
It was busy.
Yeah?
Busy, yeah. I mean, the amount of sports my kid is in right now, might have to rethink this, but
it was busy. Saturday, all sports?
Friday, Saturday.
Huh.
Thanks, bud.
Dog bowl boy.
Yep. Promotion.
You're such a good water boy.
Did you get that out of the tap, or is that...
Thanks, dude.
No, it's filtered.
Okay, good.
Oh, good. Give him the good stuff.
Can't have any atrazine in my dog's water.
Fluoride
and atrazine.
So you're busy with just a lot of activities.
A lot of activities.
What's Turtle playing right now?
Right now, it's wrestling, baseball, football, hockey, in this like agility class that he does too.
What was the one like?
Might need to rethink this. He's five.
He'll get a little older and pick one.
I hope so.
One or two. Like he'll find something he really likes and gravitates to, I think. That's what I might have done.
What was the one like just running around like ninja class? He's still
That's the agility class.
Ninja class? Yeah. I think that one's so funny.
It's actually my favorite one that he goes to. I think it's the best for him.
Yeah.
My wife left Friday at 1 and drove to Santa Clara, California with my middle kid for a convention. And he did that. And then she drove back. They left at like 2 yesterday afternoon. It's like 11-hour drive. Drove back all the way. She got home about 2 in the morning last night, and then my middle kid had games all weekend, so it's just like, all you do is run. Just run. So as your two boys get a little older, like, what you got to look forward to?
That's the scary thing, is I'm about broken with just the one, and I got the other one right on his heels. That's gonna be in sports too.
It's fun
and I like that he likes it, you know. Mm-hmm. What I mean, like, me and my wife talk all the time. Like, I don't really care if he's good, bad, whatever. Like, if he's having fun and he wants to do it, that's all we care about. But he, does want to go do all these things. So it's like, okay, can we pick one or two maybe?
So
you're five.
I'll feel bad then when I say I finalized all my wild boar sticks this weekend.
You have so much Friday free time right now, you don't even know.
I folded like a billion loads of laundry. I did floors. I did the grocery shopping. And then I just ran my kids around. That's all I did.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
No personal free time.
Brady, you need some kids.
No.
You don't realize how much free time you have until you
Lorenzo
have kids.
Can draw you a picture and show you how that works.
Yeah, I can let you know how it works. I've done it twice.
I'm good.
Actually, Trail might be better at it. He's done it 3 times.
Yeah. It is fun though. Like it's just fun to watch your kids get better at something that they start to like, you know?
Yeah.
You watch
it's
them.
It's fun to watch
them
like it. Like, I do enjoy that he likes it and he, you know.
Yep.
Gets competitive, you know. Mm-hmm. I do like that, but like, I don't care if he's five. Like, what do I care if he's good, not good, whatever? Like, as long as he's having fun. But he does have fun, so it's kind of like, how do you talk him out of it at that point?
Yeah, my youngest kid had 2 basketball games on Saturday, and I was kind of sitting in the middle section of the bleachers, and then, you know, I had one of the other kids' mom and her other kids came up and they sit below me, and then the dad came drifting in. I stood up and I was like, hey, you can have my seat. And he's like, no, really, it's fine. And I was like, no, I'm going to go find a corner and sit in, which is what I usually do anyway. And he's like, oh, you never even say anything. And I was like, well, yeah, I'm like, he's 12. I'm like, wait till he gets in high school.
Then you'll start piping.
And then you're going to hear. Are you a dad that yells a lot? Do you get
it? No, I'm very quiet.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good. Man, I was never good at that.
I'm very quiet.
I'm fine when they're young for some reason, but like when my oldest got into high school, I like blew a top.
I could see that happening to me for sure. Like I said, now I don't really care because he's 5. Like,
yeah.
Kid's not going to make a difference.
The more competitive they get, the more competitiveness like starts welling up in me, and I just
like
boil over.
Your oldest son lives and dies by basketball.
Yeah, I love
and
that.
He wants to be as good as possible in the whole thing. I could see if Turtle was doing that in his sport and he got to that point of drive. I could see myself going the other way for sure.
It's excruciating. The older they get and the more competitive it gets and the more that's like on the line.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to have to, it's awful.
Take a beta blocker before you go to the game.
It is awful. No lie. Look what your dad went through, Brady.
That's probably true.
Did you ever ask him about it?
No.
He's a pretty calm guy. I wonder if he was a yeller.
Was he ever? Do you remember him yelling?
No, he helped coach a lot.
He's a real calm guy.
Yeah, I never remember him getting all jacked up in a game or anything.
Really? Mm-hmm. I took my
words of advice afterwards, like to me personally.
Really?
But like not during the game.
Coming and talk to you. My dad always did that too.
That's a good dad.
Yeah. I went to a high school game Friday night and I had no stake in it at all because it was just a high school game. I don't have any kids playing anything like that. And it wasn't even our local high school. It was like another, Parowan, little tiny town. But my youngest kid wanted to go, so I took him and a buddy, and we went to the game. And I just, like, observantly, I wasn't so into the game that, like, I blocked out everything else around me. So I just got to, like, sit and watch and observe.
Parents.
the mayhem. Yeah. And I was like, holy smokes.
Yeah.
It's pretty gnarly. It's fun, though.
Parents are... they're interesting.
Brady, did you watch Super Bowl last night?
Nope. Told you guys.
No,
I was undecided and I did not.
He's too cool. He's one of the hunters that's too cool to watch football.
I thought you said you were going to.
I thought I was going to. And then it got to Sunday and then I was with my girlfriend and we were like, do you want to? She's like, no, don't care to watch Super Bowl at all. I'm like, I knew I meant to be with you. And so we watched a random movie for a little bit and then she had to go home and then... I decided to go for a run, so went like almost a 7.5 mile run.
That's good.
There's no traffic anywhere. It was great.
That's right. Nobody around.
No one's around. Mm-hmm. And that's what we discussed earlier. Like we should plan on doing things on Super Bowl from now on because there's no one doing anything. Like we can go hiking. We could probably get out and do stuff and just have the whole place to ourselves, which was great.
Be
so running was really fun.
If you do see a car on the road, don't want to mess with that car.
That's like you're talking about after the game or
during, after, like about. A lot of people pregame pretty hard for the Super
That's
Bowl
true.
Too. It's like
That's
it's
true.
it's a dangerous time to be on the road.
Yeah.
If you do see cars,
especially if you go after. That, you're right. After. So I was like,
it's like a no. It's it being in a
known thing.
City, you know, sports capital of the world.
Yeah, and everybody gets together for Super Bowl parties.
A lot of people fly in, and it's a dangerous time to be on the road. We try to not drive anywhere during.
I didn't even
times.
Think about that.
Yeah,
but it was an enjoyable run.
Not even the commercials.
Mm-mm.
Nothing. No draw.
I pulled it up on. I had the ESPN app on my phone. And it was like, wow, this game looks boring.
It was kind of a blowout.
I'm glad, I didn't watch.
I was talking to Lorenzo earlier. There's a couple of things, and we'll lead this back into hunting, Brady. But
no, we'll get in trouble and people shut off the podcast because we're talking about hunting or talking about football instead of.
I was asking Lorenzo, like, I mean, what happened? Like, and I'm so fascinated by the psychology involved in this whole thing, because how does a team that essentially is on the verge of a three-peat history, making history, obviously you would think that their motivation has to be absolutely through the roof.
Yeah.
You have a team that comes in with a chip on their shoulder.
Yeah.
And just walks away with it.
Yeah.
And why? How?
Well, if the psychology part of that, like the amount of nerves trying to three-peat, doing something that no one's ever done.
Do you think they had more pressure on them than the Eagles did?
Yeah, I think the Eagles were on a free roll. Like you're playing the Chiefs during this dynasty, you're almost expected to lose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously the public money showed it. Chiefs were a 1.5-point favorite by the time it closed. That's all public money sports bets. So like, Eagles, right? Like they had lost to them. What, 2 years ago now? So, I mean, they had a chip on their shoulder. They had really nothing to lose, though. It was everything to gain, nothing to lose. The Chiefs are, like, the ones that are trying to do something insanely special, the three-peat, the whole thing. So sports psychology-wise, just mindset, I think they had a lot of nerves, and it showed the first couple drives.
Do you think the Eagles had a better game plan going yes. in? You yeah. do. So you think some of that was coaching as well?
They had a better team. They had a better team, and I think they used their game
more
plan
talent.
Used it. Yeah, like their defense. Mm-hmm. This is what I told you. I didn't want to tell you until the podcast. They ran a cover four shell defense.
Okay.
No clue what that
like
means.
Like 60%, more than 60% of yeah, the game.
I heard the.
They did not run one blitz, not a single blitz yeah. the entire game. So what that cover four shell defense, what's that mean? What that means is everyone's in coverage and only your front four are pressuring the quarterback.
Gotcha.
So you have seven defenders in passing lanes and pass zones. You have four rushing the quarterback.
That's game plan and analysis.
That is, we have better people, and so we're going to use our people against theirs.
Gotcha.
So it's not like scheme to mm-hmm. try to get one up on them because you're evenly matched or anything. Vic Fangio, the D coordinator for Eagles, mm-hmm. who's been in the league for fucking million years, literally. One of the best defensive coordinators of all time. Yeah, he knew going in, like, hey, we got these guys beat on the front, so let's just not lose to Mahomes.
Yeah.
So, like, they're not going to be able to run the ball, not going to be able to do anything. So if we can get our front four on the quarterback, Mahomes isn't going to beat us. Like, that was the game plan. We're not losing to Mahomes.
Yeah, I always wondered as I was watching that, I'm like, how much is this game plan? Like, you had a better read on the game going into it, and you kind of were able to extrapolate and hit yeah. their weak points, if you will. Yeah. And how much of it is just like psychological mindset? The other thing that got me thinking about this, you guys see over the weekend, Bodie Turner shot a 327X with the Matthews Genesis. Do you know it's a kid's bow?
Yeah.
Wait, what? I did not see this. So Bodie Turner.
This is way more exciting.
Joel Turner's kid.
Sports, by the way.
Joel Turner's kid, right? So he's, you know, arguably one of the top, I would say, three or four archery, you know, shooters right now. It's so, like, over the weekend, I don't know if he was like shooting leagues or whatever, but he shot like, I think he shot a Vegas face, right? So 30 arrows, 10 ends. So he shot a perfect game and then turned around and just for fun shot a Matthews Genesis, which is a kid's bow. Put a sight and stabilizers on it and shot a 327X with a like legit kid's bow.
Define 327X.
Like, I've never shot a 300. So the most I've ever shot is a 297.
I thought you could only shoot a 300.
That is. That's as high as you can shoot in a Vegas game. So he shot a perfect game, essentially. He only dropped three X's with a kid's bow. So the X is like the baby yeah. dot in the middle. Yeah. So, I mean,
almost perfect.
A perfect game. He dropped 3 points between like a fully set up Matthews title, which is their top of the line
and
target bow. And then he turned around and shot the exact same score, three X's less. So he still shot a perfect game, a 300 game. Three X's, dropped three X's over 30 arrows, which is, in my mind, I'm like, how on God's green earth is that even feasible? And to me, like,
he's good.
He's good. Like, he's good, but like, man, I just been thinking like the mental side of this thing.
It's all the mental side.
Yeah.
I was telling Lorenzo earlier, so I shot a 297, which is the highest game I've ever shot. Shot mm-hmm. that in the weekend. And like, as I was getting up, like in my ends, you know, like luckily the first three that I dropped were like in the first five ends. So I was like, yeah, whatever. But like, as I was approaching the end of that, I'm nervous. I'm sweating in my kitchen.
Yeah.
You're not even
in the back. By myself. Yeah. I've got the Today Show on TV. I can lit it. There's like no stakes at all.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't shoot a perfect 300. And yet this yeah. guy's shooting a kid's bow. And I'm just like, man, the mental mindset.
Yeah. What I'd be really interested to know if like how much tuning went into that Genesis. Did he spend as much time?
Probably.
Or probably just slapped it on there.
Probably not a ton.
I wouldn't think so.
Probably none.
But like, if we look at how many times people tune a target
yeah.
bow, and it's like constantly you're tweaking things.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you just grab a random bow and you can shoot.
My guess is he probably put a rest on it, probably put his bars and his sight on it and sighted it in 5 minutes with three or four arrows and then just turned around and smoked it.
So in that case, it go to show that you don't need the perfect tune. You need the shooter to be able to hold it mentally and arrows mm-hmm. can go where you think they're going to go.
It's had me thinking, like, what?
No, it's always the bow.
It's not just like golf. That's true.
Club. Yep. You play bad, go get
a new bow every single year is yeah, way so better.
Yeah. Shooting bad, go get a new bow.
The sight. Mm-hmm. I think you can probably pick up a few here and there, but ultimately it's the guy behind it.
Yeah, that's very, very impressive.
The guy throwing the pass, the guy shooting the bow.
Yes.
Well, it goes through you guys. This has me curious, then we'll hit promos here in a sec. But like, what it made me wonder, because like I've been shooting a bunch of arrows, like, what does go through your mind when like it's a high pressure shot? Like, if you guys honestly assess things, Brady, like, you shoot an Nargali, right? You spent a lot of money on that hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you remember what you were thinking?
just do everything I've done the last 10 months.
No self doubt?
Mm-mm.
Not at all?
Mm-mm. No, I was honestly like afterwards, yeah, I was an emotional wreck.
Mm-hmm.
But like during it, I was calm, collected, did everything right, dug bipod in, got the range, looked at the wind, did everything I know I did because I've trained to do that. I mean, that's probably what you know, guys like Bodie just like, it's just automatic.
I just want to know
in the mental game.
I want to know how you shut it off. I was asking Lorenzo earlier. I'm like, how do you shut it off?
I don't know if I shut it off. What goes through my mind is I talk to myself about like the randomest things. You know what I mean? I'm still in the moment, mm-hmm. but like you and I were talking the shot I made in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. I would agree is one of the better shots I've ever made.
For sure.
That's what we were talking about last time. It's one of my better shots. That and the shot I made on my bowl in Nevada as well. Those are two. And the deer in Utah. Like those three archery shots are the ones that stick out in my mind. And all of them, the one thing I can tell you exactly what I did is just talk to myself about the randomest things. Like when I was at full draw and he's standing there by the cow, I'm like, oh, he's looking at the cow. Well, he's licking his lips. That's cool. Like,
yeah.
Now he's following the cow. I should probably count his steps since he's following the cow and I can't rearrange him.
Take an inventory of the situation.
So I'm like, 1, 2, 3. I'm like, okay, he started at 17. He's done this. Okay, I'm going to shoot it for 38 mm-hmm. yards. Like, I just try to talk. Yeah. I don't try to. That's what I kind of do naturally. But those three things, I can tell you for sure, that's what I did on those three shots.
Mm-hmm.
Just talk about the randomest things.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I wonder if he's going to turn. Oh, he's going to turn. The cow turned. He's probably going to turn.
Yeah.
So I should probably put my pins right there. It's like literally talking to myself like that conversationally.
Yeah. Shooting a lot of indoor has been interesting, just like an experiment in like focus.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are some times when I just can't focus.
Well, that's how we talk about in the Marchery Madness. I'm not a spot shooter and all mm-hmm. that. And everyone gives me shit for it. But that's what it is. I have nothing to talk to myself about.
Right.
There's nothing going
on. It's totally different.
So I'm just, there's no variables to talk to yourself about.
No.
It's like, okay, I'm at full draw. Okay. The target's right there. Okay. My pin's on it. That's what I don't want to focus on. I want to focus on the,
he looks
cool.
I know I need to.
He's got snot dripping out of his nose.
Right.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have that when I'm shooting targets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause an animal to me, it's something's life.
Yeah.
And so I don't know why I focus so much easier, or it's like a deeper connection to like everything I know is going right because I've did all the work up to this. And if I'm laying behind the gun, like I feel like that animal is dead. Just me laying behind the gun. Like I've done everything right. Like I know I'm going to make the shot. That's just the confidence I have that because I've done this, you know, all throughout the whole year for that one moment. And that's an animal's life at the end of the, you know, barrel.
Yeah.
And I have to make a perfect shot. I can't have a mistake. And sure, you could do something, but like, I know I could make the shot if need be.
Yeah, that's what I know I can make the shot. So the last thing I want to think about is the shot. That's how I feel on an animal. But then when it comes to the target, like marchery, we were talking last time because I actually did shoot pretty good.
You shot great.
Last marchery.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of it, I'm like, why do I care? Why do I care? Why am I shaky and sweaty under the lights right now?
Mm-hmm.
And then I started telling myself when I was at full draw, like, why do you even care?
Yeah,
like, don't even care.
Mentality
and then you start thinking about the shot even more because you want to not care, even though you do.
It's weird because I would say in a hunting situation, it's a lot easier to focus for some reason, just the nature of that, the intensity of it, because it matters so much to you, right?
And just so much is going on. You get to look at other things and feel
if you talk to somebody that's like an elite level pro in that, is the advice to like not care? Like, oh, you shouldn't care about, you know, complete score.
Maybe.
I go back and forth.
Act like
you know
it's just
mean?
Like maybe you're practicing in your basement. Like you don't care. In
one
sense.
Shot at a time.
See, that's what people say. One shot at a time. But man, I cannot. Like as I shoot arrows, I'm walking back and I'm like, oh, dropped one there. That puts me at three for the first six ends. You know, I've got three more. I'm counting my arrows. I got nine to go.
And you're already thinking ahead.
I'm already thinking ahead.
Yeah. Like so, the best I can shoot now is only 297.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly it.
But like what you're saying about like you're focusing so hard in the marchery competition. That's why
I don't like that.
And it's like, but it should just be like, just we don't care. Just and you probably will shoot great.
But
just
then don't I start to care more when I do that because I am competitive, so I want to beat everyone.
Yeah, you want to beat everyone.
But
you want to be in the rounds too.
Yeah, I'm mad at myself that I care in that setting.
The more,
like, why do I care about
the
that?
More it matters, the more you seem to focus. But I don't know that that's the right answer. I don't know if that's the best thing. I don't know. It's had really. I've been down rabbit holes.
The hunting shooting for me is where. Like I feel very comfortable with because I can get out of my head on the shot because I know I can make the shot. I've done it a million times. So it's like, okay, now let's focus on getting the animal in the right position, and let's think about what he's doing on his way there and talk about it.
The animal, I don't know why, it is so much easier though than practice.
You get tunnel vision.
Maybe it's like you say, your practice should be so crazy that just makes everything else just that much easier. Like whatever that one's saying.
And, like hitting anchor points and bubble level, that should all be second nature, which I would say it is for us. So then you get to pay attention to like the other side of it. Let's get him in the right position.
Have you ever seen a sports psychologist?
No.
Never. I haven't either.
I've read sports psychology books.
I would like to. I think it'd be fun.
Me too.
The books are really good.
Are they? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, was it Lenny Bassam?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what the book title is right off the top of my head, but I have a couple of those like sports psychology books and they're really, really good to read.
Yeah. I mean, I don't need to go to therapy, but I would see a sports psychologist.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that would be really interesting to explore and just see what it is that you can do.
Why does my brain do this when I'm at this point?
Yeah. I was telling you earlier, so Utah State, we follow basketball. There's a kid that's a point guard and he shoots really good 3-point percentage. He's a solid point guard. That guy's foul shooting percentage is like less than 50%. And the last few games, like I get pissed when he gets fouled. Like when I'm watching the game and this kid gets fouled, I'm angry because I know he's going to go to the line and probably miss at least one, and most likely he's going to miss two. But the reality is like that's all in his head.
Yeah,
because he can shoot 3-pointers, make layups, he can hit shots in the key, but he can't make a foul shot. And I'm like, I want to know the psychology of that.
That's like a target shooter. Sure. Like I can't shoot a target. He can't shoot a free throw. It's like it's too calm. I'm sure that's probably what he's thinking. Maybe. It's like it's too calm. You have to pay attention so much to just the shot.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe we get a sports psychologist on the podcast. That'd be interesting.
So I just looked up that book. It is by Lenny Bassam. It's With Winning in Mind.
Okay.
If you haven't read that book, I highly recommend it. Okay. I have that one at home. Maybe I'll let you borrow it. The last time I let you borrow a book, Charlie didn't give it back to me.
I have it. It's on my nightstand.
You didn't give it back to me. Just saying.
I actually looked at it the other day, and I was like, I need to take that back to Brady. And then I forgot.
This book is really good. It's a pretty easy read, but it goes through so many different examples about, like, because it was trained a bunch of people and Olympic athletes about, like, the mental management side of things.
Do you know what's interesting, though, is I feel like I would not get the same out of a book as that I would with sitting and talking to somebody. Like, I could read the book, but I don't know how I would interpret that into action.
It's 100% me. I wouldn't even try to read the book.
If I could sit and talk to somebody that can help give me... Because, like, Joel Turner, right? We've talked about Joel. We just talked about Bodie. Like, he has this whole shot IQ thing, and I've never been through his complete program to know, like, what it entails. But, like, I've listened to every podcast he's done with everybody because I'm like, I want to know what I can glean from that. But, like, I hear him talk. I understand it, but I don't feel like I can applicably use that.
You would learn so much in person from him. Because, like, all the years, like, whatever, the last 4 years, 5 years, I've done, you know, the Western Hunting Summit with Ryan Lampers. I've given seminars, but always he's there. Joel is. And listening to his thing every time, I have a notepad sitting in front of me. I take so many notes, and I've heard it 4 or 5 years in a row. But I learned so much. The lessons he gives in person, phenomenal.
I want something like applicable.
It's so good to go. You need to go in person and hear him go through it.
Yeah, I probably do.
And then like his course too is still worth it. Like I paid for his course online, and like I think that one's really great. But like hearing it in person,
I should just go through the course and see what I can get from it.
Let's just hire him, bring him here, and do it for all of us.
Yeah, right. Good stuff.
That's how I would have to learn, though, too, is conversationally me personally. Yeah, not just like the blanket statement in the book.
Yeah, then you could ask specific questions that apply to you.
Yeah. Let me tell you what a head case I am.
And then you could tickle his arrow or his a little feather in you while you're trying to full draw and start yelling at you. And
yeah, that's the kind of stuff I don't think that would bug me that much. Yeah, I don't think so.
At full draw and he's.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. But maybe we'll find out.
Yeah.
We can try it this afternoon if you want. I brought my bow.
I can yell at you.
I got my bow in the office. I was planning on shooting with you today.
Okay. We'll do it. We should hit promo. We're only 24 minutes in.
Lane's gonna not bad.
Brady, do you want to hit promo for the podcast?
Podcast, yeah. So, I mean, everyone knows it's research season. Applications are coming up all across the West. A bunch of states we still got going here. So we want you guys to have the best research tools possible. So use promo code podcast when you sign up for a GoHunt Insider account and get access to everything at GoHunt. App strategies, you got draw odds, you got filtering, you got point tracker, hunt planner, GoHunt maps. You can research on GoHunt maps with all of our research tools as well under the research tab. So if your person just wants to sit on their phone and do the research, you can actually research and plan for your hunts this coming year. So promo code podcast will give you 50 points back to the GoHunt gear shop. And that's $50 to spend on anything.
I was told today we have the runway free and clear to talk about something new we have coming.
Oh, we can talk about that.
I was told. I was told today we can talk about it.
Full runway.
Full. Yeah, I was told we can talk about it. So
who told you full runway?
Lane did.
Okay, good.
Yeah, Lane told me.
He didn't tell me full runway. So I was
talking earlier about this. And I was like,
I don't. This might be one of those things where he said one thing and I heard another. But we're gonna run with it.
Are we gonna open it right now?
So
give people what they want.
Yeah, predictive draws.
Predictive draws. You heard it here first.
How do you feel about that?
Stoked.
What do you know about it?
Awesome about that.
So what I know so far, it's only going to be on the standalone draw odds page.
Yep.
So there's going to be a separate, basically it's the same view, mm-hmm. but you'll have predictive odds and then you have normal odds, which are the odds that go off of year prior,
yep.
exact odds of how the draw worked.
The exact math of the year previous.
Previously. So you'll be able to see that and then you'll be able to see predictive, which is potentially what this year's going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And they've gone through tons of simulations of how to figure this out. And I can't remember what states it's launching with first, but a bunch of the preference point states.
Preference point states.
Yep. Those are going to be the easier ones to do. So you're going to it's not going to be that end all and be all in a sense, but it's going to give you a good idea of how things are trending for units. You maybe can track point creep, how it's, getting harder and harder to draw a certain hunt every single year. And it's going to be super cool just to showcase that because.
I heard some pretty crazy statistics how true they think these are.
Yeah, like the confidence interval.
I don't
want to blow that up yet, but
I'll just say it was high.
High.
Very, very high.
Really high.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it'll alleviate. I mean, every year we've talked about it. We'll get people that use the product and they'll use draw odds and they'll apply for a tag at their point level that they assume that they're going to draw. And then we'll get a nasty gram and they'll say, hey.
Nasty gram. I like that.
Nasty gram. Yep.
That is good.
you should coin that.
I'm sure somebody, I stole that from somebody, but.
Sorry. Be like, going said 100% draws and I didn't draw. What gives? That kind of comment.
Yeah, that kind of comment. That's my head went somewhere else. I was gonna make a joke about something, but they'll say, hey, I didn't draw, and why? And they're upset, understandably so. And then we'll kind of have to explain to them how to utilize draw odds. And now, I think I would still encourage you being more active user, so understand how the draw odds work. Both historical and predictive.
Yeah.
Go back and look at the numbers, look at the number of applicants, the number of tags allocated at each point level, look at it yourself. But for people that are more passive, I guess I would say, this is a huge step. Like you'll be able to just take a look at it and, make a really high guess that you'll draw that tag and you'll be able to get your tag and go.
I would highly recommend people watch that YouTube video you also did. What, a couple weeks ago, where you explained how you actually use standalone draw odds. That did not include predictive, because obviously we weren't talking about that yet publicly, but that you would go through and explain why you can't just look at number face value, why there's also other things like how many people are applying, the trend, 5-year trends and all that stuff, and now you can look at predictive as well, and predictive's going to be awesome.
It's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it opens the door for a lot of other things too. I don't know if I want to talk about it, but what we can do with predictive.
Not those other things yet.
Yeah. So predictive is going to be really cool.
We've always said we couldn't predict odds, and I guess we still can't predict where people are going to apply on any given year, but by running
a lot of
modeling and however the hell they did it, we have a super high confidence interval.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to, we can't predict odds.
Predictive draws will never be 100%.
Yep.
But you can get to a very high level of acceptance of what we believe it to be accurate enough that it's definitely worth using.
Listening to those guys talking to Brandon, I would say it's probably more predictive than your own guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
And no question about that.
And what we were talking about the other week too is hunters are very, they're very predictive in the ways that they apply all the time.
And numbers and patterns and trends, trends are there for a reason, and humans make trends. So it's the stuff that you're not seeing, the predictive draws are going to be able to display that.
Yeah.
In a number form for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's like everything, right? It's just getting smarter, and it can take into account a lot more information and data and compile it and put it out in a format that you probably couldn't do on your own.
Correct.
And I think of it too, it's just another
tool. We all passed math class, though, just to be clear.
Barely.
I did a lot of math with a lot of tutoring. but it's just another tool in your toolkit.
Yes.
Like you still have your standard draw odds, now you have predictive, and you have everything else to look at. So it's just another thing to help you make the best application decision for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There's a ton of different ways to use it. and hope everyone gets a lot of use out of it.
So should be going live soon.
Yeah.
So give us your feedback. I'd be interested on what you guys think.
Yeah. Even the layout and how it looks and all that. So.
For sure. President's Day sale we got coming up. Yep. So I wanted to note that. That'll be live by the time this goes out. And select brands in the Go Hunt Gear shop.
Yep.
You can jump into the shop and save yourself some money.
You should ask Brady about his commercial he did for this.
Give us the rundown, B-Mills. I heard you were enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, I volunteered because I thought it was a really cool idea.
And?
And I got to dress up as George Washington.
He's the only guy tall enough to be George Washington.
Off. And I, quote-unquote, crossed the Delaware.
Nice.
So, did you actually cross?
No. So the funny thing is,
I have not asked about how this turned out. So I'm hearing it for the first time.
What's super funny is Omar was like, hey, we need a raft. And you're the one at the office who has a raft. Do you want to use your alpaca raft? And I'm like, I'm not using my like multi-$1,000 yeah. really expensive raft that I use for hunting.
For this,
the chance of like, you know, the chances of it getting torn or something are very slim. Yeah. But I'm like, I don't want to wreck it. So please, I don't want
to
use it.
That's not what George Washington would have said.
No, yeah. Definitely not.
Yeah. So it made it better. We looked on like, you know, all these different stores around town. Like, can we get a little like kid's raft?
A rubber dinghy.
And so Omar goes to like Walmart, I think. And they like ask the guys, like, hey, you got any rafts? He's like, hey, it's not rafting season right now. So there aren't any rafts available. So what does he do? Gets an inflatable mattress.
Yeah, this is what I heard.
Oh, wow.
So I literally had a, I don't know what you call it, what size, but like very small inflatable mattress.
A twin.
Yeah, a twin. Basically what you would sleep on at your house for guests, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And someone's like, hey, can you bring a little pump for it? So like, yeah, I brought my little like flex tail pump thing. Tried to find a place to go. And we need a river.
Yeah.
Kind of hard to find water in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
So we found an area that dumps out from a lake. That's whatever. I don't know why there was water there to begin with, but it comes out into like a little stream river thing. I was like, oh yeah, we could probably do it there. I've seen water there before. Should be water there now. Get all the way over there. It's a raging stream river.
Oh, nice.
Thing. Like there's step pools and like rapids and all this stuff. And like, ooh.
Class three, class two. What are we talking?
Even better. Was there anyone around?
No.
Dang it.
I know. That would have been way better.
That was my ultimate hope.
When I first heard, so Omar came into me and he goes, hey, what is the betting odds that Brady can cross Lake Las Vegas on a inflatable mattress? I'm like, wait, what? Yeah. Like, I thought he was canoeing. What was going on? It's like, no, we got an inflatable mattress. I'm like, there is zero chance he makes it across Lake Las Vegas. Yeah. So I have not heard where you actually crossed.
It's the outlet below Lake Las Vegas.
Okay.
Yeah. And so like I started like trying to figure out a spot when we were hiking down there. And I was like, everything was like super fast. And like, then it was a step pool drop off. Like literally a 3 foot drop.
Are you hiking in there as George Washington?
No, I didn't hike in George Washington. I know. So, but we hiked all the way down there and I finally found a spot. I'm like, dude, this is pretty fast. Like I could definitely go. Cause like my previous job before this, I literally rafted every single day and like really fast moving water in Montana. So I know how to do it.
Not on an air mattress.
No. Not on an air mattress though.
And not dressed as George Washington.
And I was like, well, we only may have one shot at this. So let's like try to like do something first. So I'm not going to like totally fall in. But like if I fall in, we have to show it because it'd be hilarious.
Yeah. What's the costume entail?
Full head to toe George Washington.
Wig, the whole deal.
Knickers. Yeah, so I got the best. I'll show. Maybe we can put it on the podcast.
Wig? But white wig?
Mm-hmm.
Here's a.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. This is a full deal.
People won't be able to see it. Maybe we can show it on there. Here's my selfie. This is the ultimate selfie.
That's so great.
And I kept my aviators on too, of course. Catches me.
It's so funny.
So yeah, I went on the water and started rafting and went downstream a little bit. Like, can we go like downstream further? We'll do a drone shot. I'm like, I think if I go downstream, I'm going to end up having to go really far to a next pullout area because everything on this little stream river thing is like straight cliffs. That's why the water's actually really fast through there for a mattress.
Are you just sitting on it?
Yeah, I'm like kneeling on it. And they had like an American
flag.
Do you
have a paddle?
I brought my paddles actually.
And damn it, why is no one around to see this?
I know.
And then the problem was too, because the water is actually really cold. And I tried to inflate it extra pumped up or whatever. But of course, the thing's like deflating as I'm in the water. So like I was kind of nervous to actually try to cross and go downstream a lot. So
did you ever fall in?
Never fell in.
Did you cross?
I went halfway.
Oh man,
I got scared because like the water started getting really fast.
You didn't invade the British and went out and then, huh?
You didn't invade. America doesn't exist.
Make it look like I might have crossed. So that's all
that's
that matters.
So funny.
Yeah, but because of you, now America doesn't exist.
Oh, I should have. I'll go back and do it.
Did you? Did you enjoy it?
It was really fun. It was really fun. To be dressed up as George Washington, to be on an inflatable mattress in
you felt honored
for work.
Yeah, for work. Yeah,
getting paid to do that is pretty cool.
Would you say?
And it was a good hike too. We actually had like, I don't know, 3/4 mile hike.
Nice
to go down to the river.
Would you say you're more of a method actor? Did you get really into the character? Carry around a bayonet all day?
Yeah, I started, you know, researching, trying to get my voice right, and like all these things. That always backs. Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to see that.
It'd be fun.
Me either.
Yeah,
it'd be fun. I can't wait to post my selfie. I'm not a selfie guy, but it's like when you're dressed up as George Washington.
I think that should be your new profile pic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For sure. I know you won't. Should I timeline post that one on Instagram or just?
I think that's a straight profile pic.
Yeah.
Let people ask.
I know you won't get mad at this because everyone was hoping, but I was really hoping you'd fall in.
I kind of was too.
I was to really hoping you were going in as George Washington.
Me too.
Because yeah. I was like, if I do this, keep rolling.
In the full costume.
Did you have pants? Great.
Have full pants and everything.
It's amazing.
Even had those like fake boot gator things.
Buckle shoes?
Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, I was hoping he was going to flail.
Well, I was in flip flops, but they're like, these are like boot things that go over your normal shoes, you know? It's like,
yeah.
How cold was the water?
It wasn't actually that cold, but it was.
50s? 60s? How cold was it?
It was probably like 60s, yeah.
It's not bad.
Yeah. Should we talk about water?
Let's talk about water. Oh, look at that segue.
Did you like that?
No,
that was a professional segue right there. I promised last podcast, because I've been getting questions, should have burned my points. And I promised we'd talk a little bit about drought and water conditions. So we didn't get to it then, so maybe we do now.
Yeah, that's the one thing I was looking forward to most in the last podcast.
Oh, it was?
I mean, the hunt story was really cool.
Yeah.
But I'm always geeking out about these type of things.
Give us a rundown on the current conditions across the West.
So current conditions across the West, it's going to depend on where you live or where you're going to go hunting. Some of the areas are really good.
Are there good areas?
Yeah, some of them are 95, 100%.
There's some silver lining?
There's two specific areas that are very
there's
good.
There's a lot that are above 100% snowpack or snow water equivalent right now. It just like if you're going to look at southeast part of...
Let's start south and work north.
Okay, so the worst areas right now are going to be Arizona and New Mexico, by far.
And how bad is it?
Bad. And southern Utah.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the map around like Las Vegas, southern Utah, like your area, so your city area, we're at 17% of normal.
17.
And that's based on a 1991 to 2022 median. So 17% of normal of snow water equivalent.
I was talking to my neighbor the other day, and he's relatively new to the neighborhood. He's been there about a year, and he was like, man, it seems really dry and really warm because it was like 60 in February. And I said, yeah, I think legitimately in my lifetime that I can remember, I think this is the driest winter year I can ever remember. Even when we had those 3 years of drought not too long ago, we had some dry winters for sure, and they compacted because it was over 3 years, but I can pretty reliably say I think this is the driest I ever remember it. Like, it is dry.
I mean, 17%.
17% is crazy.
In mid-February is no joke.
Yeah, so, and that's just that area. So it includes a little bit of Las Vegas, obviously includes Cedar City. But you drop into, like, places around Prescott, you're 4%. Flagstaff area, 13%.
Whoa.
Just north and east of Phoenix. You go way down south by Safford. 12% of normal. There's a zero. There's several zeros in the extreme southeast corner of Arizona and then New Mexico.
Is New Mexico pretty much the same
picture? 21% in like the western part, like Albuquerque, you get way up north, 36%. Northwest corner, it's a little bit better. It's 54%.
Yikes.
But 54% isn't that good either, though.
No.
No. Not when you're halfway through February.
I mean, this is why I published... I had an article way back in the day and updated it before the Arizona elk and antelope deadline because I like to use these maps for application season. I think it's really, really good to use it during this app time.
Especially if you're utilizing points, right?
Yeah. And so they're very good to look at. And so the website I use...
I was just going to ask you to say that.
Yeah. So
people know where to go.
So I'll pull it up right now. So I use all the maps from... first you can use U.S. Drought Monitor maps. I use those ones a lot to track drought. And then in combination of that, I use the USDA current snow depth maps and then USDA's snow water equivalent maps.
Gotcha.
So this article, everyone wants to check it out. It's called Why Drought and Snowpack Maps Are Important for Hunters and How to Use Them.
Okay.
How them link it in the podcast. I think it's a very good thing to look at. And then you can click on this one by the snow water equivalent map, and you can actually turn on each individual states. You can go to basin conditions, and you can go year by year. And this is where I think this gets really, really powerful. I can see what it was last year, mm-hmm. what it was 5 years ago, what it was 10 years ago at certain dates. So I started looking at these maps a little bit in like January, all the way through, you know, through the summer. And mm-hmm. then even into next fall as well, I want to be able to track sometimes like, okay, what are snow conditions potentially on some mountain hunts? But it's a little bit harder to do that, but definitely through app season and then into summer antler growth period as well.
Yeah.
And so like I was just looking at, these are dates right now from February 9th, which is yesterday of 2025, that I can go February 9th of 2024. And I can mm-hmm. track when have those severe drought things happened on the snow water equivalent map, but also when have winter kill potentially mm-hmm. happened too. So I did a lot of things broken down the bottom of that article, talking about the 2017 winter kill year and the 2023, showcasing all those maps and, you know, how that's going to impact things. And you can also track like,
Run us through the other states. What about Colorado?
Colorado. So this is where we're getting a little better then. So you go way north of like Salt Lake area, you're at 83%.
Is any part of Utah decent or is it pretty well all below 100%?
The highest thing is Ogden, 83%.
That's a good percentage right now. Because Utah will get more in February, March.
They could. Usually we get one real good one, March. Like first week of March.
Yeah.
Yep. So right now, 83% Ogden, Logan, 93.
That's a good number.
East of there, 96.
Great number.
Good. Some extreme northern Utah.
Yeah. You get into like Wyoming, southeast corner, 106.
Okay.
You get up to like region G, region H, 105.
Okay, we're good.
So they're already there and they're going to get more.
Yeah, and like the majority of Wyoming is really good. 101%, 91% in southeast corner. You get up to like the northeast corner, you're like 86%, but there's some like 96% areas
Wyoming
too.
Wyoming mostly good though.
Wyoming mostly good.
Okay. Actually, almost ideal, I would say, yeah. I guess for the most part. Right around that 100% of snowpack, you're not having winter kill.
Yep.
Loss. Yeah, if you're right around 100 with March still to come,
yep.
they're good.
Yeah, good.
So Colorado, you mentioned Colorado. This is one of those states that's like, again, depends on the area. So that extreme southwest corner, you're kind of at 14%. And then you go more southern areas, 54, 63, yikes. And way southeast, Pueblo, all that stuff in the eastern plains, 78%. Decent. But you get like Grand Junction, you know, 70%. Central part of the state, Aspen area, 89%. You go northwest corner by like Craig, 89%. And you go eastern plains of like Denver, Boulder area, 97%.
So mostly south, southwest.
Yeah. And like 80s and 80s and 89s aren't that bad.
Yeah.
Considering.
With more to come.
With more to come, hopefully.
Yeah.
And that's why I said too, like you should track this every single month starting in about January.
Yeah.
And then like this is also why we can go through more states too, but this is also why I never apply right when the app is open. I had people hit me up the other week. They're like, oh, I already applied for Wyoming deer. I'm like, what?
Yeah. I've had guys hit me up about Wyoming antelope.
And like, yeah. you don't apply. We don't know how this winter or the either winter kill, or we don't know how drought is going to impact these herds. So it's kind of.
Or how the tag allocations are going
to
follow.
Yeah. And like, sure, some states allow you to modify your app, which is cool if you're able to modify. But if you can't, why are you guys shooting your app out there right now? Wait till the
shoot
end.
Your don't shot, Brady.
Just like shoot paying your shot, interest yeah. on their credit card, I guess.
yeah,
that's exactly. Put money out there. So like, I like to wait till I have all the information in front of me. I'm not saying apply on the last day. That way, this you know the website could crash or whatever. Like apply maybe that week before the deadline, but wait to have all the best information possible. Use all this information you have sitting in front of you, and you can use precipitation maps as well. There's that stuff too, but snow water equivalent and drought is just an easy visual thing to really look at.
Rest of Nevada, you brought up Vegas, but the rest of Nevada is in rough shape.
Nope.
Really?
No. You have all like pretty much Tonopah 90%, you have Eureka 90%, Ely 90%, McGill 90%.
It's better than I thought.
Way better than I thought.
Like Elko area 104. You get in the western part, that's where it gets bad. So we were talking about like Carson City area 74, Pyramid Lake 79, south kind of westish corner by where is this at? Like Hawthorne area at 71%, Walker Lake 71%. So like
a lot of those areas that are like your best hunting though in the state of Nevada is not sitting too bad.
You do have a strip going up from where's some towns here?
you gotta really zoom in Nevada.
like you're heading to Ely, all that stuff, like on your way to Ely, like that's all that like 17% stuff. It's a very slight swath on the west side of the road, looks like. But for the most part, Nevada is actually not
bad,
in a horrible place. But you hear a lot about, like, around Vegas, mm-hmm. like our desert sheep right now are hurting bad.
Not doing good. Yeah,
we don't have water and we don't have habitat to feed them.
What are your guys' reasons for paying attention to water and drought?
I give you a classic example. So a number of years ago, I burned points on a late season elk tag in Arizona, and it was on the back end of that, like, 2 or 3 year drought in a row. And I'd hunted the same unit probably 5 years prior to that, and it was a major difference in what I was seeing on the landscape. So late season hunt, obviously you're kind of thinking that you probably have some bulls that are busted up.
Yeah.
The first time I hunted it, great water year. Previous years were great water years. I saw a lot of really nice bulls, like 330 to, you know, maybe 360, 370 even. Some broken up, but not bad. You know, like a few here and there. And then the second time I hunted it, on the back end of that drought, like, almost every bull that I saw was busted up. Because they don't develop the density, you know? They're just porous and they break up real bad. And then a lot of bulls that had good bottom ends, like decent bottom ends, you know, ones, twos, threes, okay, and then just kind of petered out. So short swords, short fives, short beams, just not what they should be. And that second year that I hunted that, like, I had a really hard time even finding a bull that I thought was like 320. Yeah. And this is in a great unit in terms of trophy potential in the state of Arizona. So it's just like, you know, I would hate for people to burn points and anticipate a really good hunt when the moisture year is not conducive to producing trophy caliber animals. And it gets more important, I think, the further south you go. You talk Arizona, New Mexico, southern Utah. I think it's more important than it is in a state like Wyoming or Montana. You know, they've got a lot of high altitude and they're probably going to be okay anyway on summer range. But to burn a lot of points in an area that it just doesn't have the feed to produce that kind of animal is a real bummer.
Yeah.
Which is what I did this year.
I think it's,
we'll see how it goes.
I think it's really scary for high point holders.
Yeah.
You're at that mid to high point holders. That's when you really want to pay attention. But, like, there's also opportunity then when this stuff happens, because those are people that might be scared to apply because they have a lot more riding on it. So it could open up to things being a little easier. You could have point creep go back down a little bit in some of those places because a lot of people are scared to apply because they want to burn a lot of points.
You say high point holders, but I mean, I've got five right now. So I applied in Arizona and it's a hunt that I will draw, should draw.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, five isn't that many in terms of points in Arizona, but
you're at a stage where you should start to consider five years
of my life.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And you're going to wait another 5 to 6, 7 years to get it again.
Yeah. I mean, that's the difference from me being, you know, 45 and probably 50 some in my early 50s before I potentially hunt that again.
Yeah.
And you do wonder, is the right thing to do to, like, maybe wait and pull that back a year and just see what the next year, because, you know, maybe better quality experience.
Is it a late season hunt?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what, for me, looking at this stuff, I typically look at it most for late season for being broke. Like, there is such a correlation on the dry years to the late season hunts. You literally just cannot find a animal that's put together still.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a lot of your bigger bulls don't hit potential or bucks because they just don't have the feed. Yeah. Anything else you've noticed?
I mean, I look at a lot too, potentially, for animals entering into summer range stuff, like you said. So, like,
the body condition
of does.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want really droughty years multiple times for that, for a doe to not be really healthy to produce a fawn that 1 year. So, like we talked about a lot, like, then eventually, you know, those bucks are going to grow up on drought years for their whole life and not be at their full potential later on.
Mm-hmm.
So you can look at a lot of different ways. Obviously winter kill is a big one. Like, you can see it literally when you look at draw odds after winter kill year, severe winter kill year.
For sure.
Like, if you go into Wyoming, go to G or H.
Worst possible combination would be a real bad drought like this on
and
the
back,
and then straight into a real gnarly winter.
Yeah, which is what happened to Wyoming.
Yeah,
that is what happened there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That would be real bad.
The other thing too is there is a noticeable change in, like, some of the places and units that, you know, I've hunted a bunch or we hunt a bunch and have a lot of history with and a lot of knowledge on. A real dry year or a real wet year will change that.
Yeah.
That's what I've noticed too. Yeah,
for sure.
So you go in with all this intel and you have all this stuff and you go into a dry year and it's like anything of what you knew now doesn't matter. Like, now it's different. They're all in different places acting different.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So the intel changes. That's the other thing I've noticed a lot too.
Yeah, that's a great point. I hadn't really thought about it, but you're right. Absolutely. They'll be in different spots.
Like we go, some of these units, we have so much intel in, and then 1 year it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
This is brand new to me. Like I'm back to square one.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, good point.
Maybe I'll round out a few more of these states really quick.
Yes, please.
Because we thought it was doom and gloom, but it's like I said, it's actually, there's a lot of states that are really good. Like Northern California, Southern Oregon. You have a lot of places there that are 167%. You
know, where at?
Southern Oregon, Northern California.
Ooh, that's good.
So yeah, Southern Oregon right now.
My fellow waterfowlers here. That's good for us.
Yeah, like Medford area, 154, all that stuff.
Wow.
Just east of there a little bit in Oregon, 184%. You go up, you have 124% in the eastern part of Oregon. Northwest corner, 106%. Like a lot of Oregon's doing really well.
Work your way through Idaho. What's Idaho look like?
Idaho's looking great, too. So you have Boise, 124%. Pocatello, 103%.
What about up in the panhandle?
Up in the panhandle, you were looking at 86% up to about 90.
Not bad.
Central part of Idaho, 91%. Some of the stuff just south of Montana border, 118%.
Boise Valley is over 100. Is that what you said?
Yeah, 124.
So you're talking, yeah, there's some good stuff throughout there.
Yeah, Northwest Montana, 90%. Southwest Montana, 93%. You got stuff around Helena, 97.
What does Western Montana look like?
Yeah, like Kalispell, 90%. Missoula, 90%. Way northwest corner in like the Yak area, 90%.
Okay, and then what about the east?
Around Yellowstone, 93. North of Yellowstone, like Billings area, 97. Central, around Great Falls, 97. You go to eastern Montana a little bit. Go like way southeast, you're getting to like 86. You have some 97.
You know,
still
but not bad.
It's interesting. Like it's not as bad as we thought. But we're
always down here where it's super dry. We think everywhere else is
and
the same.
We live and hunt the most where it matters the most too. So we're like keyed into the negative side of it more so than.
Yeah. The only scary thing is for Montana, before you guys jump in, is further. Around like northern Montana, around the Canadian border, the Highline area, that's 211%.
Ooh. Damn. Really?
So, yeah. And then you go just south of there, like south of like. Missouri River
bad?
Type stuff. It's 133%. So 211. That's where you get to the point where you're like, there could be some antelope dying.
Yeah, they could push 300% by.
Yeah, so that's a lot. They have a lot of snow water equivalent right now, which means a lot of snow, which means a lot of drifted snow, which means not a lot of habitat.
And you and I living there for a good point of our life, they get snow through like April.
Yeah,
like into May is when they keep getting snow.
Yeah,
they're 211.
They could be pushing 300. By the end of it.
Yep, 211.
Yikes.
I wonder if that's too much.
Yeah, and then you look
at
a lot
of antelope up there.
So wrap it up with a bow. Like what states should you be concerned in and which states maybe you should?
Should be concerned in Arizona, New Mexico. And Southern Utah.
Where you have a tag.
Yeah.
That's where you should be concerned.
And then I just jumped back to 2024, for example. In 2024, we had a great water year down here.
Yes, we did.
The northern states did not have a great water year. So all those states like Montana, Idaho, Washington, Oregon, last year at the same date, they were sitting on average, looks like 50% to 60%. This year they're flipped and they're better and we're worse.
Yeah.
Head north, young man.
Good thing you have an Arizona tag with 5 years of waiting.
I know, it's such a bummer.
Is this the fifth year of it or sixth year of it?
This would be my fifth year. Is that what you mean? What do you mean?
Like, is this your sixth year applying? Yeah, so you're 6 years into this.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you had 5 points. Now you're sixth year applying.
Yep. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I'm thinking is like maybe, I know that the last time I had it was like 2 years of drought, maybe three, like pushing on three that weren't that great. So I know it was like kind of compounding and getting worse. My hope is that.
We were on a good water year last year.
Yeah. Maybe it'll carry over a little bit, you know? Yeah. Cal, I don't know. It's tough.
It's tough.
And here's the thing that's kind of bad too. So this is why I said look at month by month. So I just went back. So we're looking at February 9th, 2025 data. I just went back to January 9th, 2025. And you're seeing the same trends, 28% in southern Utah, Las Vegas area, northern Arizona, 7% central Arizona, 5% southeast Arizona, New Mexico, same thing. And then I jump back to 2024, look at December 9th. And December 9th of 2024, like that southern Utah, Vegas, Northern Arizona was 63%, but then the rest of Arizona was still at 1%, 11%, 19%. So like they've had it bad for
a little, yeah,
at least 3 months going on now, December, January, and then into February of not any moisture.
Yeah, I saw Phoenix broke their previous record, or maybe I have that wrong, or maybe it's the second highest, one of those things, of the longest span with no water. Wow. I saw something about that. It was either the second longest or the longest.
So we're right now in Las Vegas. We're in the second longest dry streak in the city's history. We're at 206 as of February 4th, so that can be...
Don't worry. We have a 45% chance. That's what I pulled up. 45% chance of rain on Thursday.
Are you saying the second longest?
Second longest. And our previous one was set in 2020 when it went 240 days without rain here in the Las Vegas Valley.
Which was during that drought, real droughty.
Yep.
Man, not good. Need some moisture.
Some love.
Colorado, we're okay for the most part. Wyoming, we're good to go. Idaho, good to go.
Idaho, Montana,
a lot of
Oregon.
Nevada, a lot of northern Nevada.
Northern Nevada.
Pretty good.
Central Nevada.
Montana, we're golden.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Golden pony boy.
Yeah, I didn't mention Washington, but a lot of Washington, 78, 74, 80-something percent.
Yeah.
Washington's also pretty good.
Gotcha. Well, that's interesting.
So do your snow dance and rain dance.
Have you ever not applied?
No.
To a state because of something like this?
No. I did save my points in Nevada 1 year and just did points.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, yeah, I did that too. Yep. In 20, I don't know if I would have drawn though. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I haven't drawn since then, even though I've been trying. But that year I did do points.
Which is silly to think about too, because like, all right, you always have a chance in Nevada. Maybe you could pull a great tag and then like look at it. But I was like, I don't know if you could... And talking to everyone about our mule deer conditions, like what the herd's doing, I'm like, I just didn't want to have a tag. Like, yeah. I would have turned it back in anyway. So I decided not to.
Yeah.
But that's the only one I can think of in recent memory that I actually just purchased points just instead of actually went into the draw. But yeah, it was just one.
Yeah, I never have. But looking back, there's definitely times that I should have. Do you know what I mean?
Like, maybe
it'll bite me in the butt. Like,
I
applied in Arizona for elk.
Yeah.
I have, you know, I'm creeping up into
big elk guy. He's a big elk guy.
A lot of points in Arizona. I'm not going to say my point total, but it's way above 10.
I don't know. I mean, I know that hunt, I was pretty disappointed in what I saw on the landscape. Yeah. I mean, I found one bull.
Would you rather been home not hunting?
No.
Though? Exactly.
But that's the thing. It's always you play the what if game. Like, what if I'd have just waited and then gone the next year, the year after?
Or you might never have drawn.
You know what I mean? You can what if yourself to death, but
I would rather just hunt though.
As would I.
I get so depressed. I'm not a good person at home if I feel like I could be hunting, but I'm not.
Right.
And you never know when states is going to switch up the draw on you like Colorado did.
Yeah.
So like, what if Colorado's in a bad state right now? And then like this 3-year wait period till 2028, all of a sudden people just stop applying. It's like,
I think if anything, it can help you with your expectations. You know, going into it, maybe a little bit more realistic expectations, and then, you know, maybe not passing up an animal that you probably should shoot.
Yeah, a day one, intact animal, and you're like, oh, maybe there's something better.
Yeah, and maybe there is, but probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Again, this is why we always talk about it. I wish we could get ages back on animals instantly, so we could be like, yeah, that actually was a really good animal, but
wasn't the
greatest because of a drought. But I've also killed a really big deer in a drought year, though, too.
Yeah, that's the outlier. Uh-huh. Everybody always says that.
It happens.
Oh,
my dad did too. My dad killed a great buck on a drought year.
I really want to get, and I reached out to Eli and Tony Grimmett with Pronghorn Guide Service and asked them if we could do a podcast with those guys at the expo. They're not going to be there, unfortunately. But at some point, I really want to get them on. And yeah, I really want
to talk to them.
I really want to talk about antelope and drought and water and what it does.
Well, there's a lot of knowledge.
Oh,
on antelope with drought,
for sure,
more so than any other animal, I feel like.
Yeah, I need to talk to those guys because I don't think anybody's looked at more antelope than them. So,
no, I was telling you, you brought that up. Like when I had my Nevada antelope tag, I bought their DVDs, like Size Matters and all that. Like, there's phenomenal DVDs.
Hearing you say bought DVDs, did that strike you weird? That struck me weird.
Hey.
Buying DVDs. And
you never know when these companies are just going to wipe out your digital collection. You don't actually have it when the world ends. I'll be still watching DVDs. I have a VHS player too.
Technically, VCR. In the terms of service, you do not own any of that stuff you bought. So you are right.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that?
We actually had this discussion yesterday.
Mm-hmm. I had somebody bring this up to me. When you like Apple TV and all this stuff, mm-hmm. you buy it, you can rent it or buy it. Yeah. Technically, when you buy it, you're just licensing it. It's like you don't own it. So they could,
mm-hmm. We could have something like the old TikTok thing where all of a sudden it's like, hey, Apple TV is no longer allowed in the United States.
Yeah, you don't have any of these things you bought. Weird.
So DVDs, my Lord of the Rings collector's edition DVD set. Best purchase ever made back in the day.
Yeah, that's funny. I'm going to hit one more thing and then we'll wrap up.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk a little bit about this Washington.
Oh, yeah.
I really just want to note it, I guess, if you will.
That we're looking into it and people should be aware of it.
Yep. So people have been reaching out and asking, like, hey, would you guys talk about this Washington bill? So I went to, and I didn't know a ton about it. And so I would encourage you, I guess, to go and read, actually. And so I just went to Howl for Wildlife. Mm-hmm. And I went to their, like, what you need to know section. And they
took on their action.
Yeah, their action. Yeah. Yep. So they recommend opposing Washington House Bill 1685, which proposes moving Fish and Wildlife Commission under direct gubernatorial control.
Gubernatorial. Explain that.
Just like government, governor, the governor's control. So rather than being just like the governor controls Fish and Wildlife, an appointment is the way I understand it. And I need to dig into it. I just was looking at it this morning a little bit, but, yeah, call to action. So I just wanted to like put that out there. Go to Hal's website, read up on it. They have direct links to how you can help. So I would say jump over there and look at that. And then the other one, a call to action to support SB 769 in Oregon, which is local cougar management with ODF or ODFW oversight. It says that SB 769 offers a targeted solution for communities struggling with balancing cougar populations with declining deer and elk herds. Under this bill, each county's voters could decide whether to allow hound hunting, which while retaining crucial oversight by ODFW, which will continue to set seasons, quotas, and regulations. This means no county would be forced to adopt hound hunting, and any harvest would still occur under Oregon's longstanding science-based management framework. So I just wanted to throw those in on the tail end. Go check out Hal's website. Hopefully get a chance to talk to those guys and kind of find out what's next on their agenda and what they've got going on and how we can help.
This Washington thing is a big issue.
It is a big issue.
Because I'm sure hopefully people saw the news article we posted back in January. New report calls Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission dysfunctional.
Yeah. Yep, and they give three. Essentially, they went through and did an overview or a review, which they are calling. It's an interesting read. I read it this morning. I'm trying to remember if I can come up with a name. I'll try to find it here in a sec. But essentially, they're urging number three. Essentially, solution number three. Hmm. Support for solution number three, which would. I believe, here, let me find it real quick so I don't speak. This is like one of those times where you find yourself talking and you're like,
I was that early in the podcast. I need some space right now to look this up real quick.
Yeah, so option three is the best path forward. Reforming the commission means installing checks and balances. The commissions follow science, respect department staff, and abide by our state's law with clear guidelines and transparent method for removing those who won't uphold their mandate. The commission can once again serve its intended purposes to protect and manage fish and wildlife using unbiased data-driven methods. The review is RUCKELSHAUS. Ruckelshaus review. So read that review.
I'll let you pronounce that one.
Yeah. Ruckelshaus review. So I would say read the review, read up on what they have to say on how, and then take the actions there at the bottom on how you can help.
Yeah, because I mean, Washington's so messed up. Animal rights people in the commission, because it's all citizen appointed, like for wildlife stuff. Just can't happen.
Yeah.
It just can't.
And then so I think you and I will probably be at their booth maybe for an hour or two in Salt Lake. So stop by.
I don't know a time yet, but yeah, we'll be there.
Me either, but stop by and say hi if you're in the neighborhood.
In between us podcasting.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a full schedule. Yeah. You guys ready to just get absolutely blitzkrieged at the expo? It'll be a lot of work.
Always is.
Always a lot of work.
But we got a booth.
Yep. Stop by the booth and say hi. And yeah. That's it. for the week. Anything else you want to say? Closing remarks?
No, see everyone up there. It's all like one of my favorite shows. I always like going up there to connect with people and hang out and see, you know, people you haven't seen in a year.
Okay. All right, we're out.